Hey, this is Johnny Jett. Welcome back to my podcast and YouTube channel. And today we have Shannon Kircher, who used to be a travel blogger. Are you still a travel blogger?
Still am, yeah.
Still is a travel blogger. But I was pleasantly surprised when I was doing some meetings a couple of weeks ago with Trav Media. And she also represents a hotel, a popular hotel in one of the most beautiful islands in the world, Anguilla.
Yeah, very, very lucky to be here. So I've actually been down here about 8 years, but I started blogging probably a couple years before that, but I've lived here for a lot of my blogging career as well. So it's been, I've tried to not solely focus on Anguilla so it doesn't become too biased, but definitely my Anguilla content for people coming down ends up being a big draw for people that are trying to find kind of firsthand insight into the island.
Right. So, I mean, what's the name of your hotel?
So we're at Frangipani Beach Resort. So we're family owned. So my husband and I have been here running the property for a little over 8 years. We got married here. We've had our parties down here. We throw carnival parties every year. His family has actually been coming since the 80s. So my husband started coming when he was a kid to the island before. I mean, Anguilla is still rather under the radar, you know, for most people. But then it was very much under the radar. They'd just gotten power to the west end of the island a few years prior. So it was very rustic, total gem. His parents discovered it from California, which is quite a trek to the Caribbean. Loved it. I mean, fell in love immediately, started coming back every year, every other year. And then about 15 years ago, decided they wanted to buy a home here, a place here. And that turned into buying a hotel. They'd never had a hotel. They'd never had real estate investments like that. And said, what the heck did we just do? We just bought a hotel in the Caribbean. And so my husband actually was a senior in college at the time. Ended up going into hospitality and did grad school work in hospitality and actually worked in hospitality management in San Francisco and California, where we're from. And then now we're here. So it's been a fun transition for sure. Totally different pace of life from San Francisco, but a really, you know, cool place to live given the dynamic small island, you know, expat circles, the kind of people that come down here on vacation. So it's a very interesting environment.
That's amazing. So where'd you meet your husband, by the way? In college?
So we met in California. So we're both from Sacramento area originally. Okay. And I went to graduate school in London and he was living in Shanghai doing a fellowship after grad school. We both moved back to California. We grew up maybe 30 minutes from each other.
Wow.
Never knew each other until we were 25. Met and we sort of connected over this international, you know, lifestyle that we both had loved and lived. And then when the opportunity came up to move here to Anguilla, it was sort of a no-brainer for us. It was just kind of the trajectory of our life. It sort of made sense for our relationship. We moved here before we got married. So we really ripped off the Band-Aid, moved to the island, joined a bank account, started working together. We share a car. We moved in together. So we were really testing the waters. Luckily, it worked. So we've been married for 8 years. We got married on the island.
Well,
But yeah.
So what's it like to live on Anguilla? I mean, I've been there once. I know I've been there once. I might've been there twice. But yeah. And I only went for like a week, but it was, you know, it's beautiful. The locals were really friendly, but are they friendly to?
Yeah. I mean, so that's exactly it. I think, you know, why can't I come on vacation? And obviously coming on vacation for a week or two, drinking rum punch on the beach is different than what it is to live here. And so we've lived, both of us independently had lived in cities before this, London, San Francisco for me, Shanghai and San Francisco for him. And then we moved here and this is a far cry from the city, right? Our population is about 14,000, it's 33 square miles. We don't really have like a city. So it's for sure a change, but I think for us, the key is we both are really busy with work because we have the hotel, we're family owned and operated, we're the ones down here operating it. So there's a lot of hands-on stuff, which is great for us given our personalities and kind of like needing to stay engaged with stuff. We've also been involved in other projects. I'm on the board of the Anguilla Initiative, which is a great nonprofit that works to give back to, you know, local populations, different segments in need. Scott's been on the board of, you know, hospitality organizations here too. But it's a transition. I mean, for sure, coming from a city where you have enrichment opportunities and a lot of like-minded people and a huge population. So your friend group can shift as it will.
Right.
We're on a tiny island. Expat group is 300-400 people. That's probably on the high end. You know everyone. Everyone knows you.
And are they from America or are they from London or the UK?
Mixed. So we're a British overseas territory. So that's a good point. Most people assume we'd have a pretty big British contingent right here. We have a few Brits, mostly American, decent amount of Canadians too, that come down. It's cold up there. They like being down here.
And was there a huge influx over COVID because, you know, they all wanted to escape?
Yeah, actually it's been an interesting year for us because there's a kind of a set expat group here, right? Like hoteliers, restaurateurs, like, or we've all been here. That there's some transientness with that kind of inherently, but it's sort of the same group. COVID, a lot of people came down who maybe were visitors to the island who would normally come for a week or two. And they stayed after the lockdown, just said, well, why would I go home when the world's crazy? And we live on an island with zero cases of COVID. So people ended up staying. So we have kind of this like totally different expat group that I don't know how long it's going to continue, but a total, you know, change of people, a lot of new blood, people with really interesting backgrounds who are able to work remotely. So it has shifted for sure. And I don't know how long that'll last, but it's been kind of a cool change of like scenery and population.
So you have no COVID cases?
Or zero. I'll say zero cases of community transmission. We'll occasionally get a guest who comes in who tests positive on arrival. But the way the protocols are now, you have to stay, you know, in your room until your test comes back negative, the one you take on arrival. Usually the tests come back in 6 or 8 hours. So it's not really like a hardship for guests. It's pretty fast. But they do that because we've had a few people that have tested positive on arrival. So we've caught them, we've isolated them, and we've had zero cases of community transmission. So no COVID.
And do they test them again after a couple of days? Because what if they catch it on the plane?
So they test on arrival, and then we have sort of this like quarantine light. We have this bubble kind of safe environment approved concept. So if guests test negative on arrival, they're at our property, and there's a whole heap of things they can do. So they can use our pool and our beach, and they can walk the beach during the day. The biggest thing for people that come often is they have to take taxis. So you can't rent a car and drive around because there's certain restaurants you're allowed to go to. There's certain places that are really designed for locals. And so just to maintain safety for the quote unquote quarantine period, 14 days usually for people, you can go to designated places. That's nice. You know, 14, 15 restaurants. There's plenty of options, but you can't go anywhere during those, just anywhere, you know, it has to be approved.
And do you know if other Caribbean islands run the same way?
Everyone's sort of taken a different approach. Some were like super loose about everything early on. And I think as we've seen the cases spike in the US and then obviously with visitors to the Caribbean, we've seen some of that shift, right? Like some of those places had zero cases and then it spiked. And we've been really fortunate that our kind of conservative measures have actually worked really well with keeping kind of balancing health and safety and tourism, letting people in and bringing, I mean, economically, our island is fully tourism based. So we had to find a way to open up. And all the other islands are in the same boat, right? I mean, every Caribbean island, there's very few that are not majority tourism based economies. I think other places have done similar things. I'm not sure quite in the same way, but I think places are now looking to Anguilla as sort of a model because we've managed this sort of tourism health, you know, this right. It's been kind of a tough balance for a lot of economies that are tourism based.
Have you left the island since?
Yes. Yeah. So we left August, September. We were gone for a couple months. We did 1 month in Greece and 1 month in Tanzania.
Wow.
Which was great. It was kind of a nice time actually, given the global kind of like climate at that point, it was a pretty good time to be gone. But we were kind of, you know, the first day when we left, we'd been living, you know, in a little bubble, no COVID. We didn't have to wear masks. There was no real social distancing because we didn't have any cases here. And then when we were getting on a plane, I mean, we were those people with all the Clorox wipes and the masks and just everything, you know, worried about every surface, you know, being a COVID vector. And then after being in the real world for a few days, we kind of like realized it's not as scary as we all thought it was. And with the managed protocols in place and following the rules, you can actually be okay and travel, you know, safely and for places that needed it. But for the Greek islands and for Tanzania, both of those places, I mean, people were so gracious, like so grateful that we were visiting because their economies are also tourism based.
Right.
But coming back, I mean, we came back, we live here, we had to quarantine for 2 weeks and do the same thing that everyone else would do. You know, it's not a bad place to quarantine if you're going to quarantine somewhere. Yeah.
So while you're quarantined, you can go swimming in the ocean. You just can't go.
Yeah. Okay. No, exactly. And for us, we're part of Frangipani. We're in the Meads Bay bubble. So it's the only beach that's really kind of developed this concept. A bunch of hotels and restaurants have essentially amalgamated their spaces So our guests can walk like 2/3 of the beach because all of the places on the beach in that stretch are part of the bubble. So we say, you know, from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m., let us know you're going to walk the beach and we'll let, you know, other hotels know that you've been approved to do that. And so guests can walk, they can exercise, they can walk to a neighboring restaurant during the day. So they still get that kind of beautiful part of Benguela, doing the beach walks, being outside. We're very fortunate here. It's sunny all year. It's al fresco dining. So you don't have, I think, the concerns that you probably do being in a city where you're inside and kind of all of the stuff that maybe leads to the higher cases. Everything we're doing here is open air. So I think people, you know, who've come from cities in the US or cities in Europe who've been, you know, everyone's been kind of like, it's been a tough year, right? I mean, everyone has been confined. They've been on curfews and locked down. And this is the closest thing to normal a lot of them have felt in a year, is being here, being outside, being in the sun. And maybe it's not 100% the Anguilla experience they had last year, but it's pretty close. Right. So it's kind of what we felt when we traveled. We're seeing that from people, that gratitude, that thank you for giving me some semblance of normalcy.
Are people wearing masks there, or they don't have to?
Yep. So if you're, you know, when you're here for the first 14 days, you're wearing a mask to walk from point A to point B. So if you're going from your hotel room to the beach, you wear a mask. But when you're on the beach, you're at the pool, you're swimming, or you're playing tennis, you don't have to wear a mask. It's just walking from point A to point B. All of our staff wears masks. So, you know, everyone's protected and we distance and we have sanitizing stations. So we have a lot of protocols in place to keep staff safe and obviously make guests feel comfortable too, but also let them have kind of a normal experience here as well.
And do you have a good hospital in Anguilla?
We have a decent hospital. I mean, it's a good hospital for, like, I never feel concerned living here. I think we have good doctors. We're limited, we're a small island. So that was the big concern for our medical team when we reopened after COVID. And that's why they were so strict early on. We have 4 isolation beds, right? We have very small hospital. They're good, but it's not adequate if we were to have an outbreak. And a lot of people who live here do have underlying conditions, hypertension, diabetes. So the medical community just kind of said, we need to try to find this balance of allowing tourists in, but also really being aware that if something were to happen, like, we don't have the resources. As good as the hospital is, it's fine for these one-off things. If we had a big issue and a lot of people needing hospitalization, it would be more of an issue for sure.
So what would you do? Airlift them to St. Martin or?
I mean, if it was a COVID related issue, they could take care of up to 4 people. And any of the Americans we've had come in, or I should say people that have come in that have tested positive on arrival, I think they've all been Americans so far, just given that that's most of our, you know, guest base.
Right.
I think most of them have flown out privately to go back home, whether that's medevac, or a lot of people will come in privately now on private planes, just because it feels safer for people. So a lot of those people have, you can't obviously leave in a commercial plane if you test positive for COVID, but a private plane I think is allowed, or they just isolate in, you know, a hotel room, and provided they have a mild case and they don't need hospitalization, they can do that too.
Right. So I know a lot of resorts in like Mexico and other, like Dominican Republic, you know, if you do test positive, first of all, do you offer testing? Because a lot of, to get back into the US, you now need to have a negative test, everyone within 72 hours or 3 days. And some people, if you do test positive, they'll even take care of your rooms. I assume, you know, boutique hotels like yours cannot do it, or even places on Anguilla might not do it.
So to get to Anguilla right now, you apply to visit the island. So it's kind of the government's way of being able to monitor for the testing, right? Because you have to have a negative test before you arrive. And so when you apply, it basically engages you in a dialogue where you share your flight details and your negative PCR test. You pay for an application fee when you apply. And that, for a couple, it's $600, but that includes a test on arrival and it includes a test on departure. And they do it, the test on departure is done at your hotel. So the testing team will come, they'll test you in your room. We get the test results within 12 hours usually. They'll be emailed to the guest. So especially for Americans now, because you have to have a test to go back within 72 hours, just like you're saying, we've gotten that question a ton from US travelers concerned. And that's something we've been doing since the beginning. So that's not a change in our protocol. It just happens to be that it actually benefits US travelers because they have to have that test. So you don't have to go anywhere. They do it here, super easy, super seamless.
They do it on property.
They do it on property, yep. So they come here, they'll test you in your room, they take the sample, they email you the results. Okay. And so usually that same day on the results. So it's really quick.
Okay.
And then part of the application process is you have to show you have insurance. And I think that a lot of insurance, and there's supplemental COVID insurance, it's pretty affordable. Some people have been taking that out. And I think that that actually covers for kind of what you're talking about. If you tested positive, you have to stay, you know, presumably for 14 days, but some people take longer to even test negative after getting positive.
I've heard.
Right. And so if you're confined to a luxury hotel for 3 or 4 weeks, that's an unexpected cost that you'd have to put that you probably aren't prepared for. So I think insurance actually is designed to actually help like mitigate for that situation, like to help cover those costs.
Test positive at your resort.
Sorry, say one more time.
Have you had anyone test positive at your resort?
No, we haven't, thankfully. You know, we're prepared. Every hotel has to have protocols for that. We have to have like a room where someone can isolate and be prepared for that instance. Thankfully, we have not had to deal with it firsthand. Resorts that we know that have dealt with it, you know, it's you just put all those protocols into place. It's isolation, and the healthcare team for the island is informed. And so they basically take over in terms of testing and making sure that all the protocols are met. Thankfully, I think to date, we've only had 15 cases on the island of tested positive since November.
That's
so,
good.
Yeah. So, I mean, fortunately, it's not a common thing that people have to deal with, but we're all prepared just in case.
Right. So, obviously I would think that you've lost some business because people don't want to spend that $600 extra to come there, also to deal with that, you know, chance of testing positive and then having to quarantine and not be able to go home.
Yeah,
I mean, are your hotels full or what's it like?
We've been lucky. So we're 23 rooms. We just built 4 new units this year. And then we have a 4-bedroom villa. So we're not a very good representation of the fact that we're pretty small, right? We also have a Four Seasons here. We have Cruise in our hotel. Those are much bigger properties. So our being pretty full, you know, it's like us being full is 23 rooms. For them, it's a totally different dynamic.
Right.
We've actually, over the festive season, we were very full. We had a few nights we were like 100% full for festive, which was, we felt very thankful for. Traditionally, we have the same families that come every year. And that's not been the case because things have shifted around. We're finding a lot more last minute bookings. People are just not comfortable putting money down to come, you know, 3 or 4 months because the protocols are changing all the time for their home country and for us. So we're finding people are booking more like a month out versus, you know, traditionally it would be 8 to 12 months out. And so we're seeing, you know, pickup for closer to arrival dates. A lot of people also have been extending their stays, which was something we didn't anticipate. But a lot of our guests that came over our festive season were booked for 2 weeks. Some stayed 4 weeks, some stayed 6 weeks.
Wow.
Because they got here and said, well, we've paid to come in, we're here. We've gone through all the testing and all of that. And by the way, it's actually pretty good here because there's no COVID. And, you know, if you live in New York or California or any other city where you're having to stay in an apartment or something for, you know, when you're at home, the prospect of being here is a lot more appealing. But yeah, I mean, for sure. So like right now we're about 60% full. Typically in February, we'd be 100% full, no question. But we're thankful for being 60% even because travel's tough. Getting here, there's a lot of protocols and travel in general globally. I mean, it's still, people are, I think now just maybe getting comfortable with the idea of traveling internationally.
So can you come there? Could I come there and say, I want to go there tomorrow? I can't go. You have to apply, you said.
You have to apply. The application's pretty quick, but your testing before arrival has to be done 3 to 5 days before arrival.
Okay.
So we will get people 5 days before who will say, hey, I want to come. I'm going to book for this weekend, for example. I mean, if it's Monday today, hey, I'm going to come on Saturday. They'll get the test, they'll apply, they'll be here Saturday.
Okay.
So you can, it can be pretty short notice, but it can't be as spontaneous as it maybe used to be.
Gotcha. So, you know, when I went there, it was like 15 years ago, at least, you know, to get there, I think I've been there twice. And I know one time I went to St. Martin and then took a ferry over. So
exactly.
Because you have a small runway. Is that still the case? Do you have direct flights or nonstop flights from the US?
We have direct flights from Puerto Rico traditionally, and right now those aren't really going because that demand on that leg is not what it once was. I think when things pick up, we'll see that leg happen again. And actually prior to COVID, there were conversations with JetBlue, I think, about bringing a Fort Lauderdale Anguilla flight direct.
Wow.
So there were Anguilla's popularity and kind of what we were seeing in 2019 was forcing that conversation a little more, like what direct flights can we get? Because exactly what you just said, typically you fly to St. Martin because it's a pretty big international hub. So you fly from New York or Chicago or Miami direct, or Paris or Amsterdam for that matter, direct into St. Martin. And then normally you either take a ferry or a small little kind of pedal jumper plane across. It's quick, it's pretty affordable to come over that way. But I think for some people who hadn't been here and like had maybe fallen in love with Anguilla and the sort of step removed element, they found that step kind of cumbersome, or like, hey, I don't need to make that step when I can just stay in St. Martin. So the direct flight will definitely, if we do pick that up, I think it'll be interesting to see how well it's received, because I think a lot of Americans would love the opportunity to just come direct and avoid the whole St. Martin transit thing.
For sure. So, but if I wanted to go this weekend, I would have to go through St. Martin.
Yeah. Unless you, well, yeah. Unless
it's not a problem. Do you need to have COVID protocols for them too? Or are they the same?
So it's the same. But yes. So if you're going through St. Martin, basically you fill out a form, and that same test that you're using to come to Anguilla, you would use to go through St. Martin.
Okay. So you don't need to do double.
Yeah, you don't need to take two different tests. Okay. Same test gets you in for both. There's just one document that you fill out. And our team here sends you all the information so you know exactly where to fill it out. And that's pretty quick.
Okay. That's good to know. So I assume when you flew to Greece, you went through St. Martin to Amsterdam?
Went through Paris, exactly.
Oh, Paris. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So we have those direct flights to Western Europe, which are amazing. I mean, normally in traditional years where we don't have the whole COVID situation changing our flight dynamics, St. Martin, there's direct flights to Paris, Amsterdam, Toronto, Miami, Chicago, New York, New Jersey, DC, Panama City. So it's actually a pretty good hub for travel. I mean, my husband and I both obviously like to travel a lot, and we're probably on the road 10 to 12 weeks a year. And St. Martin is a good hub for, even if we're going to, you know, going to the Middle East or Africa, you connect in Paris, you can get a lot of places from Paris or Amsterdam.
And remind me, how long is that ferry from St. Martin to Anguilla? 40 minutes, 20 minutes?
20 to 30. The private ferry, which is the only one open right now, currently you have to take the private ferry basically from the airport direct to Anguilla, and it's 30 minutes. You can take a flight that's 7 minutes.
Okay. So I think when I did it, I did not take, there was no ferry from the airport. I had to go into town.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a public one. Normally you'd go over to the French side and it's 20 minutes and it's quick, but that's closed right now, just given the Dutch and French sort of situation in St. Martin. But we still have a ferry. So it works for most people transiting to St. Martin will take the ferry versus flying.
So my last question about living in Anguilla, do you have like a Costco or a big superstore or Target or grocery store?
Oh my gosh, you're rubbing it in right now. No, none of those.
I mean, that's a good thing and a bad thing. Obviously for visitors, it's a good thing, but.
It actually is a great thing. And I'll tell you, as an expat moving here from a city, there's so many things you think you need in life that you actually do not need. And so it really forced us to reevaluate, because shipping things, so no, short answer, no Costco, no Target, no chains that you would recognize at all in the US exist here. If we want to order something on Amazon, there's no Amazon Prime. It has to go typically to Miami. It gets literally put on a ship and then delivered to Anguilla. So
instead of 2 day, it's two months or two.
Yeah, exactly. Amazon Prime is like a 1 month process. But so it kind of makes you think more thoughtfully about what you want to buy, right? Like, do I actually need this? And duties are really expensive in Anguilla for anything coming in. So you're really forced to think about anything that you want to buy, which I don't think is a bad thing, right? I mean, I think it kind of like, we all get caught up with all these things, and it's the kind of impromptu purchases. And I mean, not that we're not all victims. Of course, when I travel, I mean, I'm definitely falling into that trap. Or if I'm back in the US and I get a Target, like I will fall into it. But it's nice to be somewhere where you're maybe a little more conscious about your buying habits. You know, you don't do the little random Target stop because you have 30 minutes left in your day. Like, that doesn't happen. None of those things. But I think that is part of, you know, honestly, what makes the island so charming is so many of our guests will come down and say that it feels like old Caribbean, right? I mean, we have a Four Seasons, we have a Bellman. It is very glamorous in many respects, but it's also very authentic and rustic. And you can find whatever you want on the island, but I think having those like vestiges of old Caribbean spirit and that authenticity, it's harder and harder to find that. To be able to be on an island where you can, in normal times, rent a car, drive around, you don't have to worry about being in a good place or a bad place or what's safe or what's not. Like, everything's safe. So it's kind of, it is a special place to be. And after all these years, and even with the tourism that we have, that still remains true. That's what keeps people coming back, which it's cool. It's nice being part of it.
I actually did drive on the island, although they drive on the wrong side of the road there. And I think I told you last time that I ran out of gas. I was borrowing a car, ran out of gas. And I, you know, first of all, it's very difficult for me to drive on the opposite of the road. I'm like turning the radio off and just trying to concentrate. But I just found the locals to be so friendly. I mean, is it safe there?
100%. I mean, totally, totally. And that's one of the things I think that people, you know, anytime if it's a first timer to the island, you have, obviously those are questions like, can I go to these beach bars? Can I stop at the roadside barbecue? Is that safe? 100%. We've never had issues. We don't lock our door at home. I don't lock my car when I'm parking it. Oh. I mean, that's like such a testament to being in a safe place.
I mean, that's how it was when I was there 15 years ago, or whatever, whenever I was. And I'm glad to hear it. I mean, I do think of Anguilla as being one of the safest Caribbean islands. And
I agree. I mean, we feel very thankful for it. It's part of what people love. We actually, one of the unique things we thought during this whole COVID kind of period, we've had a lot of people working remotely coming down for longer stays, a lot of single women coming down working remotely. And I kept thinking that is such a testament to the island that people, a single woman feels comfortable saying, I'm going to check into a hotel. I'm going to go out by myself, do my own thing. And never feel, I've never even been there, but I know it's safe enough. A lot of them have been here and know that anywhere they go, you know, they don't have to worry. And I don't think that's true in every place. You know, I think there's sometimes those thoughts will cross your mind, and here it's nice. It's so safe. You don't have to worry about that.
So I assume you live at the resort, but you don't. Okay. No. I was going to ask you, you know, I just interviewed one of my buddies who lives in Vietnam, and, you know, he was saying it's so cheap to live there. I know Anguilla is not because it's an island in the Caribbean, but in Vietnam, for example, he was telling me you can rent a nice one bedroom for $500 a month.
Oh my gosh.
How much would that be in Anguilla? 5,000?
You know, it varies because Anguilla has like the mega $1 million villas that, yes, you can rent that were $20,000 a month, but you can also get a home. You know, most of our friends that are running restaurants and running hotels, I would say most people live in a 2 or 3 bedroom, probably $2,000 or $2,500 a month.
Okay, so it's not crazy.
No, it's not crazy. And no, you're not going to be on the beach for that, but you're never far from the beach because the island's only 30 square miles. So no, it's not so crazy. I mean, you can go next level and do the super opulent villas,
right?
But most people who live here full-time don't do that. So it's actually reasonable for most expats coming down to figure it out.
And I got one more question. If I'm a guest at your hotel, I mean, do I have to eat the food at your hotel, or especially during COVID, or can you go out? I mean, you said I remember going to local bakeries early in the morning there.
Yeah, totally. No, dining is such a big part of Anguilla, the experience here. In normal years, even in COVID, like we still have plenty of restaurants that guests can visit, but we don't really encourage. We have a great restaurant on site. So people will eat there once during their stay, maybe twice. Often breakfast will be there. But we really encourage people to get out because I think that's what makes it so special. The dining scene is next level here. We've traveled throughout a lot of the Caribbean and it truly is the best dining scene that I've experienced. It's a lot of chef proprietors. So people take so much pride in what they're doing. It's husband and wife teams oftentimes. You know, one of them cooking, one's front of house. So there's a huge amount of pride and love that goes into doing something like that. But the dining's wonderful. There's the fine dining. We have the, you know, incredible French restaurants and really cool avant-garde stuff happening. We also have super local spots with barbecue, and literally one of the most popular restaurants now is a local restaurant on someone's front porch that you would eat at. And so some of those things are available now. I'd say there are probably 15 restaurant options that are open. The only thing is you have to take a taxi there, but there's plenty of options to eat out. And we often will encourage people to do that just because it's so much of the experience is the dining.
Can you get Chinese food there? Italian food, Mexican food?
Italian, yes. Mexican, actually one of my favorite, we did our rehearsal dinner for our wedding. There's a place called Picante that does kind of a Caribbean Mexican. Okay. So Thai food there's one place that does very upscale, like Southeast Asian fare, but there's not kind of like a down and dirty Southeast Asian, like bowl of pho or something. That's a gap. So if there's anyone out there listening who wants to open a Thai or a Vietnamese restaurant, we would all love it.
But no Chinese? I mean, almost.
Yeah, there are a few Chinese restaurants. They're not as established. Like nothing that like a lot of our guests will go to. There's a few that are kind of a little more hole in the wall that expats will go to.
And are the grocery stores run by Chinese? Because I see that in a lot of islands, especially in the South Pacific. And I think I've seen it in the Caribbean.
Yeah, oh, for sure. That's funny that you say that. I would say, so we have our big grocery store here is called Best Buy, ironically, not affiliated at all with Best Buy Electronics. And it's actually a pretty good grocery store. They brought in like vegan, gluten-free. They've really started catering more to kind of what tourists would be interested in. But besides Best Buy, most of our little supermarkets are Chinese owned and operated.
Okay.
It's funny. I didn't realize that was a thing in other places.
But around the world, I've found it. And so, you know, is a gallon of milk way more expensive there than it would be here or things like that?
Yeah. You know, we have pretty big import duties here, but some things you'll buy at the grocery store and you're like, how the heck is this so cheap? And then other things it's like, oh my gosh, this is mind-blowingly expensive. It just sort of depends. Some of the specialty items, just because there's not a ton of demand on those items, and they're kind of experimenting bringing them in, are expensive. Milk can be pretty expensive. Things like chicken and rice, basic provisions, are dirt cheap. But it really depends on the item. There's some things we buy and we're like, this is amazing. We need to go buy every single one on the shelf because it must be mismarked. And then some things are just like, you got to mortgage your house for them. But it sort of depends on the items.
And when you fly back from the US, do you just have, you know, boxes of stuff?
I have my things. I have my things like protein powder and like things that you just can't really buy here and find, you know, like things you're kind of quirky about. But most stuff now, like I said, when we moved here 8 years ago, there was no Best Buy, this huge grocery store. It didn't exist near us in the way it does now. So we would have to go to all these little shops to make a dinner. You had to go to 5 different stores because they all carry different things. So now we feel so spoiled with having, you know, vegan, gluten-free. I don't eat meat. So having an option where they're bringing in really good alternatives, you know, substitutes, you can like be vegan or gluten-free here and actually get by. That historically was impossible. Virtually impossible. And now you can actually do it. So I think that's a pretty nice improvement for people coming down.
That's great. All right. Yeah. I have one more question. Do you have any fruit trees in your yard?
I do. Yes. This is recent. So like a year ago, this was a COVID project. We said, we're going to plant a garden because this is what you do when you're like locked down and you're not going to work. So we have a papaya tree that had so many papayas. It was amazing. We did tomatoes, peppers. I will tell you, since I planted them, I've killed probably 3/4 of them, but they did survive for a while. Limes,
mango,
banana tree. So we're doing good. We're living off the land out here.
I love mangoes. How about mangoes?
No mango. We have a mango tree, but no fruit yet.
Okay.
Maybe next time we chat, maybe this will change.
But. All right. Then I'll come down when the mango tree is ready.
Exactly.
Well, Shannon, thank you very much. And by the way, how can people find you? What's your handle and what's the website for your hotel?
So our resort is frangipaniresorts.com. I'm online, Twitter, Instagram, Lavita Shannon is my handle. So they can find me on there. I'm always sharing Anguilla stuff, our travels.
How do you spell it?
Lavida Shannon, Shannon. So hopefully we'll see you online.
Great. All right. Well, hopefully anyone listening will subscribe to this podcast or YouTube channel. And Shannon, thank you so much for taking the time. Enjoy that beautiful Anguilla water and beach. Honestly, it's got to be the nicest beaches in the world.
Truly, we're spoiled. We are spoiled. It's for sure. Well, yeah. Well, we'll see you down here. Hopefully soon.
I hope so.
Take care. Nice chatting with you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.